Welcome to the Knit More Girls podcast, a mother-daughter knitting production. This week's episode is number 46 and has been sponsored by Verena Knitting, Pearlescence Yarns, and the Simply Socks Yarn Company. This week, in lieu of our normal segments, we are featuring a chat we did with Lucy Neatby, as well as a little bit of administrative stuff at the beginning. So come on, let's chat. Welcome, welcome. If this is your first time listening, welcome to our podcast. And if you are a returning listener, welcome back. This week we're doing another one of our chats with a knitting celeb. This week we have Lucy Neatby featured, and I just wanted to take care of a couple of administrative things before we dive into it. We are continuing on the Knit More along, so if you want updates on how we're doing on that, please check the Ravelry board. Mom has a thread for her knit along and I have a thread for mine, so please check that out. What else do we have? The Sock Summit class list and costs have been posted on their website. I'll link to that in our show notes, so take a look at that. And there's a thread in our Ravelry group about that. Next week's episode will include the winners of our You Tell Us What You Want to Hear About contest, which is exciting. And yeah, I think that's it for the beginning of this one. So let's get into our chat with Lucy Neatby. I wanted to very quickly apologize for the weird echo that my voice has. Apparently my voice carries too far to have the mics that close together, so I will keep that in mind for next time. But here we are. We start in media res with us discussing sound editing and DVDs and all sorts of good stuff with Lucy Neatby. Without further ado, here's Lucy.
Although this year it was very interesting, it's the fourth year of filming. Mm-hmm. There wasn't really a word of the moment. Every other year there's been a word that you didn't know was being stressed or used too much. And this year there was one that was just a shade ahead of the others. I'm not going to say, because otherwise people will listen to the DVDs and want to, you know, to pick the word. But there was nowhere near the word of the moment. And it wasn't the same word each year. It was, and you're trying very hard not to keep stressing on this particular word. This year there wasn't one, which is amazed me. And very few ums this year, even without editing, but we ruthlessly eliminate them, and they look like sardines.
They look like sardines.
They do look like these on the picture of the sound waves. They have a little tail, and then they just look like, you know, a sardine or a goldfish. So you can ruthlessly hunt them out, and sometimes you can't get all the word of the moments out, but you pick off the easy ones that are away from the flock of words. But that's why having a separate soundtrack is really good. And occasionally I say left when I meant right. And so we can fix that. So Rob can take words out of my mouth and into my mouth. But that tidying up makes all the difference in the world, because it could be pretty irritating to listen to somebody going, so perhaps, but not now. Those are all good ones.
They are. Those are the ones they pick at in speech classes.
Mm-hmm. And those are the ones you prop yourself up on when you can't think of what else to say or how to connect something. Those are the leaders.
As opposed to having dead air.
Yeah. A lot of people are uncomfortable with silence. So.
Yeah. Well, we've just finished our fourth recording session of DVDs, filming session of DVDs. And I have to say, it's been really fun this year. I mean, it was fun the last couple of years, but the learning curve was really steep. The first year, I had no idea none of us really had any idea what we were getting into. I mean, they knew about filming, but they didn't know about knitting. This was a very, you know, this is not a major motion picture, so this is a very different situation. We have a sound guy, a producer, a cameraman, and they come on site, and we convert our basement yarn storage area into a studio, which we have actually much more control over than if we rented an external space. Plus, we have all the equipment we need. So that's our filming base. And so we filmed for a week in January this year, and I actually did a DVD for a company called Cuckoo Dolls.
Okay.
Their company is called Dolly Mamas, and their product is Cuckoo Dolls. And they're very pleasant little felted doll kit in Cascade yarns. And it's aimed at newer knitters and mums and daughters and grandmas and grandchildren. And they wanted a DVD of how to make the doll from the toes to the tip of their hair and the tattoo as well.
Wow.
And so I actually was their hands and their voice of their DVD. And so they actually came up from Boston for the filming for a couple of days. And so we filmed the bulk of our work first, and then they came in. And it was really fun having other people on set. And my grand master plan is maybe to invite guest designers in the future and do one disc about a particular designer, because when you come to these sort of shows, it's so exciting to meet everybody, and everyone's work is so different.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And so what I'd like to do is to preserve some of these people. I mean, I'm hoping they're not all going to pop their clogs, but it would be lovely to be able to, you know, for other people to see their work and their approach to it. So just a little DVD introduction, but the whole DVD, I think, should be about one designer, a look at their work, what they want to talk about, some of their favorite techniques. So that's a brainchild. It's not necessarily hatched yet. That one of the difficulties is actually getting people to Nova Scotia in January.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
strangely they're not beating down our door, but the other the other issue is you need them there a couple of days ahead of time in case they get storm stayed somewhere on the way. So you've got to have a couple of days up your sleeve because you've got your film crew and you can't not use them. So we will see what happens on that one. But Kat Bordy is willing to come and play. We're just trying to hammer out some dates.
She's a nice, brave one.
Oh, she is, yes. And she will be adaptable to, you know, whatever happens. But she says she wants to go skating. But I have to inform her that lakes... I moved from England to Canada, and I always thought the water froze flat. Full. Water does not freeze flat. We live on a lake, and it's maybe skatable half a dozen days a year because it might be just all chilled down and perfect for making a surface, and you get a nice cold night and it'll freeze, and then it'll snow on top of it, and so then it all turns to mush, and then it'll freeze really hard and big ice ridges rise up. And so actually getting optimal glacial smooth skating conditions are really quite rare. But I try and get out on the lake to skate when I can.
They make it look so easy in the movies.
Absolutely. I mean, all water freezes flat. It's no wonder I was conned.
Especially here where if it's really cold, which is, you know, at freezing. Which it has been a couple of days.
We get to hear about that because, you know, all the crops are going to be ruined. And
we had a little bit of snow on top of the mountains this winter.
Yeah, I had a listener heckling me because I was talking about going outside and, you know, dealing with the dogs. And it was 50 degrees outside and I was freezing to death. So I'm afraid to ask. I would show up in Nova Scotia with my little wool coat, my hat, and be like, oh dear, what have I gotten myself into?
Well, lots of people just hibernate in the winter and really don't do anything. I've enjoyed winters. I moved from Canada, from England to Canada 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the first few winters were fairly, you know, you get cabin fever. And then we took up skiing. And so now winters cannot be long enough or hard enough as far as I'm concerned. But what I don't like is the shoulder seasons when it's no... But the snow is melting and we do actually have to ski on a lot of ice. But between the melting of the snow and actually getting warm enough to bicycle, that's when I get antsy. So I try to be on the road during that time.
So I'm assuming you do some sort of cross-country skiing?
No, downhill, but our hills are very small.
Oh, okay.
We don't have 400 feet and 600 feet, but we have a lot of fun. Size is not everything.
I've heard that before. Once or twice. So bicycling too.
Yes.
Because I saw the bicycling socks and someone told me you biked. Before we get into biking, a quick word from our sponsors. Socks, socks, and more socks. Spring is here, and as the weather warms up, we at Pearlescence Yarns turn our thoughts to socks. Just in this week is Cookie A's new book, Sock Innovations, full of beautiful sock patterns and lots of inspiring information about sock design, pattern stitches, and more. We carry a ton of beautiful sock yarns featured in the book. Blue Moon Socks That Rock, Colinette Jitterbugs, Luette Gems, to name a few. We also carry Lucy Neatby's remarkable sock knitting DVDs. Remember, we happily ship mail orders anywhere in the world. And now back to the interview.
Yes, indeed. Everything, pretty much everything I do has some kind of deeper meaning, especially to me. But yes, I love long distance cycling. I'm not fast. I just keep going. Not quite like the Energizer Bunny, but you know, I do keep going. So I like to do touring cycling. We don't often actually camp on the way. It's usually sort of day rides. Mm-hmm. But I try and work up to doing 100 miles in a day at the end of the season.
Whoa.
But I have cheated the last couple of years and actually done the 100 miles on a tandem, which does make it a bit easier because you have half the windage and twice the power. So if we haven't had quite enough miles in our leg to do the full 100 miles on a single bike, my husband and I will get the tandem out. But I'm not that keen. Tandeming is okay once in a while, but as an independent cyclist,
excellent.
Wouldn't it make more sense if the shorter person sat in front and the taller person looked over the short person?
It would, from a view perspective, it would be great. But when you mount the bike, the stoker, the guy in the back, gets on first and you're clipped in. And then the captain, the guy in the front, mounts the bike, but he has to balance the bike and hold the bike up with the guy on the back in situ.
Ah,
so I think I wouldn't be able to hold my husband up on the bike. And I honestly think he'd be criticizing my driving from the back seat. So I'm not going there.
Okay, fair enough.
It sounds like you guys have a very active life.
Oh, I love the outdoors. I mean, when I got to California for stitches and they said, oh, it's going to rain all week, went good. Because if it's sunny and nice, I want to be outside. And so I have trouble being indoors. And my favorite recreation is to go to our local national park, which is only 2 hours away, and go backwards camping. I'm willing to hike with a canoe on my head for a couple of days to get away from everything. And so I love it's a very, it's actually very easy backwards camping, but you paddle from lake to lake and portage your canoes and disappear off the map for a few days, and that is just my idea of bliss.
Wow.
The only problem is it does involve, you know, at least 10 days of prep, because you need to weigh and measure your food and get it all sorted and plan your menu, which for me pushes my organizational envelope a bit. We've got a pretty standard menu that we resort to, and but it's something we try and do maybe 4 or 5 times a summer. And our summers are quite short, so we have to really get busy. But as soon as the bugs give over, then after sort of end of May, really, camping season starts. And Kejimkujik National Park is just my idea of the most beautiful place on the planet. And I like nothing better than to have paddled or trekked or whatever all day and to sit on the beach and watch the sun go down. But quite often I'm sheltering under a tarp in the rain, but but we tend to forget that.
It's always the good things you remember.
Absolutely, yes. And it always rains the night before you come back, so that means everything weighs twice as much and is dirty and needs washing when you get home.
Every vacation ends that way. Someone told me that because of all the traveling you do and all the outdoorsy things you do, that's why everything is so complex in your knitting.
I don't know about that. I mean, I just thought everybody knit like that.
Well, if you have to sort how much stuff you're taking and carrying.
By weight, because when you camp, my husband is very outdoorsy, and I'm not. I wasn't raised to be a camper, so when he was talking about if you buy this bag versus this bag, you'll end up with an extra pound in your bag. And I turned to him and I said, okay, what's another pound?
Yes.
And he said, no, not what's another pound. It's a big deal. So
yeah, you're talking to somebody who's sawn off the end of their toothbrush in order to save weight.
Wow.
A couple of years ago, we did a trip up to the Yukon and we hiked the Chilkat Trail as well. So we did a rafting trip and then a hiking trip. And I'm not a hiker as such, but I did plenty of practice for it. And I cut down the weight as much as I could. I mean, I'd learned, all my children had been through scouts and had done a lot of camping and backpacking. So I learned and benefited from their experience about double plastic bagging stuff. And you know, you just never let anything get wet that you can't, that it's possible to keep dry. And that was very helpful to me. It was a fun trip, but the hiking was okay, but the scenery doesn't go by fast enough for me. But the rafting was magnificent, just amazing. But I really tried hard with the weight and kept everything down to a minimum. It's amazing how much you can get by with, but I didn't take knitting on that trip. Mm-hmm. And usually when I'm doing something like that, I will take, well, maybe a sock, mm-hmm. Something really small. But I think that's probably why I fell for this little cottage on an island. Because you can only get to the island by foot ferry. And when you get there, you can have a vehicle on the island, but you've got to arrange to get it over there, but you can't commute to and from. So once you're on the island, you're on the island and you're away from it all. So there's no roads, and I mean, there's some dirt tracks, but that's it. But no such thing as a traffic light. And I believe the police visit the island every Thursday morning, so...
To make sure okay.
Yeah. But otherwise, I think it's a pretty free-spirited place.
Sounds incredible.
And it's only an hour from where I live, so so I'm looking forward to spending some time out there with my knitting this summer.
What kind of... Tell us about the cottage.
It's actually a little house that was lived in year-round by a lobster fishing family. Mm-hmm. And the old couple that lived there eventually had to come to the mainland, and their daughters recently sold it. And so having found this island, which stole my heart, and it was the island and the people over there are just so amazing. There's 135 population.
Okay.
Massive.
It is.
Yeah. So it's, I just find it totally delightful. And I found a few kindred spirits out there. A friend of mine, actually, a book artist who's modeled some of my stuff for me in the past. She has a place out there. So we actually get to see each other more out in the island than we do on the mainland. And there's a lovely, lovely couple that live out there, and she's a very talented photographer. So I can see a studio developing over in a few years, but really I want it as an away place rather than, because I live and work at from home.
Yeah.
We occupy all three levels of the house now. Two of the children's bedrooms are now relief offices, and one being a Mac office, the other one being a PC office, but the PC office will be scrapped as soon as possible. then the dining room is actually headquarters for Tradewinds and has been forever. And then the basement is yarn and a certain amount of storage. We've had to resort to external storage because we just can't fit it all in. Mm-hmm. And I have about four or five people that work with me. I keep losing track, but they gradually seem to be more and more people. I'm the only person I know that doesn't have a key to my house. so you are definitely living on the job. I mean, I have separate phone lines and things, but it's very hard to ignore a ringing phone. And living in Nova Scotia, everybody else stays up and gets up so much later and stays up so much later that it tends to run into the evenings. And I tend to be an early shift kind of person. I'm usually up and at it by 6:30.
Wow.
But then I mentally shut down by about 3:34. I'm still there, and I can do simple things like taking orders, but I wouldn't do anything creative after that, other than the actual knitting. So evenings is knitting time. I don't sit down all day and knit.
So what is your comfort knitting? What's what you go to at the end of a long day?
Oh, it's whatever's driving me, whatever's burning me at the moment. And that can vary. I mean, I've spent a whole year knitting things with holes in. Socks with holes, the almost saintly socks because they're so holy. Scarves. So we started with one sort of scarf construction. Then we've expanded that to not using the holes all over, then a scarf or a shawl, capelet with holes all of different sizes to give it different shaping. So I've had a wonderful time with the holes. And now all of a sudden my holy phase is over. I'm now into my Navajo knit triple yarn cardigans, which were partly sparked by a beautiful knitting needle that I bought last year at Stitches. Asiano, is that the correct pronunciation?
I think so.
Deborah Doyle. She's a woodworker primarily, and she started working in knitting needles, and these needles are exquisite and a delight to use.
Her drop spindles are amazing too.
I haven't tried her spindles, but certainly the knitting needle. So I bought it last year on the advice of the Philosopher's Gang, because they said these needles are so great. And I very rarely use a needle as big as 8 millimeters. Mm-hmm. And that was the smallest last year that she was able to make because of the flex issues.
Yeah.
And so when I got home, and I'd been home for a while in the summer, I thought, really want to use that needle. And I've been playing with Cowney yarn for quite a while now. And so I thought, well, if I triple the Cowney yarn, I can use that needle. So there was the catalyst for the design. And I've been teaching for quite a while about how to triple the yarn from a single ball. You make a series of slip knots and your yarn is actually triple at all times. So it's just like Navajo plying in the spinning world, but you don't have to ply it. You just make giant slip knots as you knit. And that allows you to keep the colours sorted out and use it from a single ball. So with this lovely needle and the tripled Cowney, I've been experimenting with sideways knit cardigans. And it's wonderful because you can shape the sleeve as you go. You can add short rows to the shoulder so you don't have to stand there with like a scarecrow with your arms stuck out. Using a tubular cast on up the side seam, which actually turns out to be the same tubular cast on that Kat uses, Judy Becker's magic cast on. Mm-hmm. But if you use that as a side seam, then you can knit up one side of your cast on, continue it up over the shoulder of the sleeve, back down the other side of the sleeve, and back down the other side of the same cast on. So you're instantly in a position where you can knit up the front, over the shoulder, and down the back of the cardigan all in one go, which then keeps your stripes all sorted out. And then you add short rows to give you bust shaping. You could have hip shaping, bust shaping, all sorts of additional shapings to suit different body types. And you keep on going to the middle. Then you slam in some waist yarn and reverse the process on the other side, matching all your markers. And then the very last thing you do is open up the waist yarn and put a V down the center back, which gives you the back of neck shaping. And then you pick up the stitches that are sat there waiting for you and put on the front band, and you are done. Really quick, really fun. And I mean, quick is not usually what I'm known for, but you know, everyone likes a bit of instant gratification every now and again. Yet it's simple yet sophisticated. So I've been so hooked on those, I actually knit 5 or 6 of them, which is very rare for me. I've actually been knitting my way through the colourways in Cowney. Plus, I've had a lot of... lot else on my mind, so I just wanted something I could pick up and knit. So it was my comfort knitting. It was just right for me at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I have to be at home to do interesting knitting. I've actually managed very little on the road this trip. I never seem to be in a boring bit at the right time.
Yeah. That's why I have 80,000 projects going at a time. So I can always grab something.
Yeah, I do, but they're always at a critical juncture.
Yeah, that's why they become UFOs.
Yep.
Because they're waiting to be picked up and waiting and waiting.
Well, my UFOs actually always tend to come to, you know, I can have several things going on and it's very strange. They all seem to finish in a week. Huh. They could have all been running along for many different periods, but they do tend to finish all of a sudden in a week. It's almost like, I don't know, everything comes together. And I can't really afford too many UFOs because it's how I make my living.
Yeah.
So if I do something that doesn't make it to fruition, really I've wasted a lot of time. Mm-hmm. That's not to say I don't. I've got a beaded shawl, which is waiting for the perfect edging, and it hasn't hit me yet. But it will in the middle of the night when I least expect it.
Do you keep a notebook for your middle-of-the-night epiphanies?
I have bits of paper by the bed, but unfortunately I keep losing the notebooks. I'm just not that organized. So I do try to write things down, but I do tend to lose the notebooks. I always think I'm going to keep everything in this binder, and I'm going to do a loose leaf binder so I can just keep putting these scraps of paper in there. But it doesn't work that way for me.
It's a creative process. Everyone's is just a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. I'm always struck how similar the creative process is between different mediums. It doesn't matter whether you're a woodworker, a jeweler, or whatever. There's such an underlying similarity in the way people actually create stuff, mm-hmm. which I find really interesting. And it's conquering that fear of the blank piece of paper. And sometimes you think, well, and I used to get worried when I got into a sort of dry period where I wasn't thinking of anything new. But if you just let it flow, something will happen along and hit you between the eyes, and then you'll be bubbling over. And you know, when I'm really obsessed at home, running around, everyone knows because there's bits of knitting here, there's bits of knitting there, and I'm just like a headless chicken, having a really good time mm-hmm. and experimenting. And one of my crew put it, I can't remember what phrase she used, but she could tell that I was in the moment, and just it was great. It was wonderful.
Feeling inspired? Perhaps now's a good time to take a stretch break and a word from our sponsors, Varena Knitting. Looking for fresh inspiration for your knitting? Want to wear the latest fashions but can't find patterns that appeal to your sense of style? Take a look at Varena Knitting and see if we have what you're looking for. From tunics to cable knit sweaters, from knitted lace to stylish wraps, Varena's European and U.S. editors bring you the latest fashion 4 times a year. With 50 patterns in every issue and an additional 10 online for subscribers, Varena Knitting gives you more patterns than any other magazine. As an added bonus, choose how you receive your issues, traditional print subscription or a digital download. Your choice. That's amazing. So with all of the on-the-go knitting, when you're inspired, have you had any huge knitting disasters? Any knitting attacked you?
Absolutely. I mean, everything I've learned by making mistakes. And to my mind, the idea is you try and find out why the mistake happened and how to avoid it in the future. Then it's a learning experience. Mm-hmm. But my most hideous knitting disaster, I mean, most things I can fix by fair means or foul. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty underhanded with what I do. But the most horrific knitting disaster I had was quite a few years ago. And I knit a sweater called Cables After Whiskey. It's large because it's cabled based on a table of random numbers. So it has to be reasonably large in order for it to work out mm-hmm. with a reasonable degree of certainty when you're dealing with randomness. So it's a very oversized, heavily cabled sweater, which means it's got about twice as many stitches as any other sweater you might ever have met.
Okay.
It's also worked in a single color, which for me is just about kills me. To work mm-hmm. in just one color is more than I can stomach. And I'd knit the first side of the sweater, and I'd cast on for the second side of the sweater, I think in a vehicle on the way to the beach with the children. Mm-hmm. And I was not driving. And I had miscounted by 40 stitches. So it was a perfect multiple of what I wanted, but it was 40 stitches too narrow.
Ouch. Oh.
And I didn't find that till I was trying to put the pieces together.
Oh, no.
So I'd knit a whole second side. Now, a lot of things you can put gussets in, and you can put this in, and you can insert that and snip this. But because you had to have an edge at the side of the cables, there was a point at which you couldn't just put in a random strip of cables down one side. There was just no way but ripping. Ripping to me is the final admission of defeat. ripping... I think people rip too much. Mm-hmm. I think they need to stop and take stock and look at it again tomorrow, give it due consideration. Mm-hmm. I get so many invisible sweaters brought to me for analysis. Say, I did this sweater, and such happened, and this went wrong, and can you tell me what the matter was? And they've ripped it. Now, if they brought it to you in situ, mm-hmm. A, you could probably and correctly identify the issue, and 90% of the time you could find a good solution to the situation without ripping more than a row or two. And so I would really encourage people to not rip, just stop, step away from the knitting, think about it. But in the case of the orange one, that whole piece had to be knit, the yarn reconditioned, and knit all over again. 40 stitches larger than what was already a large piece of knitting. It was not my finest hour.
Oh, dear.
So that was a simple not checking my stitch count. Didn't double check it. Bad move.
And it's incredible how the cascading effect is just huge.
Yeah.
One small step here. The stitch in time would have saved you thousands.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, that's swatching. You may not necessarily enjoy the swatch, but it's your best defense against disaster. And it's a very small piece of knitting to sacrifice for great big saving. But always I would suggest that no matter what, and if I'd obeyed my own advice, I'd have been fine. but I would always suggest that when you're 3 inches into a project, you stop and you take stock. You take of the size, the shape, whether you're enjoying doing the knitting, anything else that you can determine from it. Because 3 inches into the knitting is neither here nor there, but you're not knitting on your best behavior as you tend to do when you're in the swatch. Everything will have equaled itself out as much as possible. And also you should wash your swatch to see if your yarn is going to do something bizarre when immersed in water and dried. Because if otherwise you shouldn't ever wash your sweater.
Ever.
Certainly wash the swatch, but that three inch check in the real thing could save so many horrible disasters.
That's true. So you were talking about how monochromatic knitting doesn't appeal to you.
No.
And how a lot of your stuff is very colorful. And I'd heard stories about your hair. Nothing specific.
It's not quite as bright as yours. I'm really... But you see, I haven't got a personal hairdresser. And I'm really envious. I think your hair's wonderful.
See, do you do your own hair or do you have someone else do it?
Bit of both. Because I'm not home that much.
Yeah.
I have got a delightful hairdresser. It took me a long time to find a hairdresser that didn't drive me crazy and was willing to play. Mm-hmm. And so we had to experiment quite a lot to find dyes. And I used to take my own dyes to her, but currently I'm a test patch. I mean, this area here is some new dyes that actually come out as professional dyes in Canada.
And really?
I'm quite pleased. They seem to have, they're holding up better than they used to. So mm-hmm. I go to her, have highlights put in, and I do the highlighting thing rather than bleaching the lot, because otherwise, if it grows out when I'm on the road, it's just going to look really bad. Mm-hmm. And so I go before I set out on a long trip, mm-hmm. and have hair, highlights and color done. Mm-hmm. And then in the meantime, if it gets a bit faded, then I just put in some more whilst I eat my breakfast and then shower it out, and then I'm good to go for a bit. So I sort of go for the tie-dyed look. It's not because I wouldn't like it brighter, but it's practicality as well. I don't believe in wasting too much time on it, but I do enjoy it. I couldn't go back to being brown.
I totally agree.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, I've totally made a rod for my own back, and our new company logo is actually a caricature of a face with spiky pink hair.
Because right now it's a bit peacocky in front, so you've got some teal and some purple and some pink, and it's actually really a nice color combination.
Thank you. Yes, we experimented with some greeny teal color. And I think next time I might just do blue green for a change, and maybe just one bit of pink. But I expect I'll always have some pink there somewhere.
It's very cheerful. We actually, my hairdresser bleaches out because I have the same color hair that my mom has. And she has to bleach me out to about a platinum blonde to get the color to take this brightly. So,
yep, you've really got to
maintain it. Have you done any other colors before, or was it always kind of pinks and purples?
The first time I actually colored my hair, which, I mean, I'd never colored my hair in 40 odd years. And so when I decided to do this, the first time I did it was I was up in Yellowknife. Mm-hmm. In the Northwest Territories, and it was midsummer solstice, mm-hmm. and they had a big street party, and I was with a friend who did locks of colored hair with hairspray. Mm-hmm. So I asked her to spray me pink, and she did, and I liked it. So then I went home, and I actually went home pink. And then for quite a while, I couldn't find any dyes that would work, and I could not without bleaching it. And I'd never done that much hairdressing in my life. Mm-hmm. And eventually I managed to find a hairdresser, some dye and stuff. Oh, at that time we tried using hairdresser dye, and it came out a funny shade of tomato, which I really didn't like. Then we over-dyed that because I really hated that color with violet, and I looked like Morticia. It was dark violet and my hair was long, so I really looked and felt like Morticia. And then gradually over the years, I've honed in on the pink, purple. Don't often do green, but...
Yeah. It doesn't fade well, I've noticed. No. Yeah. I had a girlfriend in high school who was always kind of... I've just been in the pool green.
Ah, yes, yes. So, anyway. And also, I wouldn't want green mixed with the pink because that would make unfortunate color combinations around the edges.
That's true.
So I if I do the blue-green, it'll be just blues and greens. And pinks maybe in the blue bit, but strict segregation of colors.
That's awesome.
It's fun. I'm, but the really weird thing is my husband's a really conservative guy, and I never tell him anything I'm going to do. And he did look a bit pop-eyed the first time I did it, but he doesn't ever make any much comment. And occasionally at work, he's accused of being very conservative, and so he just turns around and said, "You are talking to the guy whose wife has pink hair," and they don't believe him. So then he gets them to Google me on the internet, and then they tend to believe him and really wonder who's the space cadet, him or me.
Before we continue with the interview, I would like to stop for a stretch break and a quick word from our show sponsors. Simply Socks Yarn Company caters to the sock knitter with thousands of colors and styles of sock yarn. Whether you're looking for Lorna's Laces, Dream in Color, or that special small dyer, we have what you're looking for in stock and ready to ship. Don't forget to visit our sales section for up to 50% off yarn and accessories. Check us out on the web at www.simplysockyarn.com.
So you travel a lot for work. You mentioned that you don't do much fussy stuff with your hair because you do a lot of travel.
Yep, huge amount. I never anticipated knitting would cause me to travel quite as much as I do. I try and stay home July, August, September. My youngest child has just left home, so although it's not critical from their point of view, it's critical from my sanity. That's camping, bicycling season.
Yep.
Then I'm on the road from the end of September through till the beginning of December. I was home all of January, which was taken up with filming. And then I'm away for a full month. I left on the 10th. I'll get back on the 7th. So that's as close to a month as you want to go. And then I'm home for 2 weeks, gone for 2 weeks, home for 2 weeks, gone for 3.5 weeks, home for 10 days, gone for 2 weeks. So that's not very much time at home. And so I'm really going to try and cut back on the traveling. But it's hard to meet the demand and not keep people waiting. I mean, they're waiting for years as it is. But I have to, and I need more creative time, and I want time to play on the island.
Of course.
And living, I get my, what I describe as my egg timer feeling.
Egg timer?
Yeah, when I'm getting close to, well, 10 days before a trip, I start to feel like an egg timer. My sand is running out. And you can't afford then to get a cold. You don't want to, you haven't got time to get sick, or, and I'm touch wood, I'm pretty hale and hearty, but and you've got to start winding everything up so that there's no loose ends when you leave. So there's the winding up time, and there's the winding down time, and then there's what I call re-entry, when you walk back home and you don't quite know where you fit in the general scenario. Not to mention, I mean, all of a sudden the children left home, which is really weird. I wasn't expecting that. And so that means my husband's on his own with the next door neighbor's cat quite a bit. And, you know, that's not much fun to be on your own for 6 weeks. And it's not much fun living out of a suitcase for 6 weeks. I love teaching. If I could space beam myself, so I could just beam myself from Nova Scotia to anywhere, that would be just fine. But I do get a real kick out of teaching. I've learned so much from my students, and just like people when their light bulbs go on, that's wonderful to me. So that's why I started doing the DVDs, because I felt that I can anticipate very many of people's questions without needing to be asked. I've seen where people come unstuck in certain techniques, and so I tried to cover all of that in my commentary of a technique. So I'm very grateful to my students because they've taught me where the knowledge gaps are and mm-hmm. and how to approach them for different people, because everyone learns so differently. Yeah. But I couldn't get by without teaching because I love it, and I love the people I meet and the friends I've made. Mm-hmm. But I need to achieve a better balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is hard.
Yeah, I sometimes feel like I'm walking along a tightrope juggling.
it's not so much balance as, you know. Burdened?
Yeah, and that's when you know you've gone too far, when you feel burdened. And so I've got two books that are so close to completion, but they need 3 to 4 months of me not doing anything else, just putting myself in the zone and doing it. And so I hope to get into that zone sometime.
Could we get an idea of what the books are about?
One is a bag book, and that's been sort of stuck very close to completion, but that's going to take a bit more work yet. But fun bags with techniques and interesting things. My whole aim, it seems, is to try and encourage knitters to become bigger, braver, more adept knitters. I mean, that to me is more important than anything else. Mm-hmm. So the bags are sort of like samplers of techniques. But of course, you know, if I had my way, it would have 3,000 bags in it, every one with a different technique. And this is just a bit overwhelming. The other one, which is close to completion, is a reworking of the finishing book that I did many years ago. So it's been completely reworked and rewritten and redrawn. And it just needs a bit more work to bring it to completion. And I mean, I feel that finishing is so vital. And there's so many places that people need help. So it's not just finishing techniques, this is what you do. It's my approach to how you finish something when you're nearly there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's sort of the story of a sweater from almost to completion.
And that's so important, because finishing can really make or break a garment.
Absolutely. I mean, I describe it as all knitting has to go through an ugly, adolescent, pimply teenage stage. So that's where it is before finishing. And if you saw some of my knitting whilst I was knitting it, you would go, you wouldn't want to touch it because it looks hideous. But few slick finishing techniques and a little attention to detail, and you can whip it into shape. But you can also do the opposite. You can take beautiful knitting and totally ruin it. And but it's having the courage of your convictions. And good finishing leads to good cheating. So the techniques are exactly the same. And that was, I mean, I think I got into finishing first long time ago before I left England. And then that led me to being able to cheat in ways that I had never dreamed possible. And that meant I could then knit bravely and take chances. And it didn't matter whether the things worked first time, because if they didn't, I could fix it. And so then I was no longer scared or intimidated by my stitches.
So how long did it take you to get to that comfortable with experimenting with your knitting phase? Because this year is 2009. My resolution was to experiment more and to be braver and to do things now instead of waiting to learn.
Well, I've always knit solo. My actual real training is as a Merchant Navy navigating officer. So I used to work on cargo ships, and I was the only woman on mostly. And so I used to pick a knitting pattern before I went away to sea that I'd never done these techniques before, and I would knit that. And one ship I was on, the skipper had 6 sisters. So he would keep buying me yarn, and I would keep knitting things, and he had a sister that it would fit. So regardless, so I constantly was training myself. And so that was really useful. And So I unconsciously trained myself. So I never waited to know how to do something. Mm-hmm. I would just dive right in. And there were 1 or 2 spectacular failures, like the red, black and white acrylic chenille that I tried in chevrons before I knew about intarsia.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a victory to the acrylic chenille. But I'm older and wiser.
Acrylic chenille?
Oh, scary. Very, very scary. I was young. Really young.
And when you have to learn these things on the streets or on the high seas, as it might be.
Mm-hmm. That was not good. But fortunately, after that, somehow the penny dropped. I don't know how or why. But when I bought a very expensive knitting kit with a whole month's wages, it was 100% Angora. And I was expecting some guidance from this designer pattern that I bought. and it didn't. It said there's a chart, and it really effectively said knit that, and I was a bit I was a bit disappointed, to say the least. But in the meantime, between the acrylic chenilles fiasco and that, the penny had dropped that what you need to do was link the yarns, old yarn over new yarn, and off you go. And so that worked out okay, and that was my first major Intarsia project. And then I became an Intarsia junkie, because I'd figured it out. And then I figured loads more little niggly things about Intarsia out, you know, the hard way. But mm-hmm. that's how you learn. And so I just constantly pushed my envelope. And it was actually my neighbor's partner that asked me to design him a sweater to express his ancestry. And I'd modified and adjusted and improved upon, because I was sort of fairly disparaging about a lot of knitting patterns that left so much out mm-hmm. and didn't bother with finishing details and collars and plackets and things like that. So as a result of this guy asking me to design him a sweater to express his ancestry, my youngest child had just gone to preschool, so soon I'd come rushing back from preschool and work on this design. And I've been designing ever since then. That was it. I've got the project that was on the needles. I think it was a Susan Duckworth in a box on the shelf in my office. It's like a time capsule, and it will never come out. And I was modifying and adjusting and tweaking and whatever, but still it was, you know, I just moved into a new chapter. And somebody else threw out a DOS-based computer, because I was never going to type for anyone. Mm-hmm. So I still don't know how to type, which is really bad. I wish I did. So somebody threw out a computer, had WordPerfect on it. Alex asked me to design his sweater to express his ancestry. And what was the other factor? Oh, the fleece artist asked me to start teaching classes, and it had never crossed my mind.
Like fleece artists, like the yarn?
Yeah, like fleece artists. Because they were a regular retail yarn shop in Halifax when I moved there. In fact, that's why I moved to Canada.
Ah.
Because when John came home from work and said, "How do you fancy moving to Canada?" I went and said, "Hang on a minute, I'll look in the back of the Rowan book." And it had a yarn shop, so I said yes.
Which is an important part of moving.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that was all I knew. But anyway, that's slightly another story.
So you got a computer. Are you a new age knitter despite your lack of typing?
Oh, yes. Finesse? Yes. So going back to the fleece artist, that was where I started teaching classes. And the first colour class I did, I taught Ferrelle, Intarsia and mosaic knitting in one evening. And wondered why people were looking a little stunned. I didn't see anything unreasonable about it, but...
all colours.
Yes. I've had this colour kit going for since I was a kid.
Intarsia next.
Yeah, I'm going to pick up... So I've seen your DVDs and I've heard kind of spotty reviews, so we talked about our plan for doing a review, because we did a comprehensive review of the interchangeable needles that mm-hmm. we could get our hands on, because yep. Addie came out with some, and the Knit Picks ones are, you know, we reviewed those, and we had some of the Susan Bates ones, or not Susan Bates, the Boy ones, and some of the Denise's.
Yep.
And we had four of us sit down and play with them and talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a few of us sit down and watch a DVD all the way through and talk about it.
Great.
So
we'll be delighted. If you want a really good laugh, read some of our customer comments. They are just wonderful. They're just precious, the comments. And people, the hard thing with selling DVDs is you can't look on the outside and decide if you like it.
Mm-hmm.
They're much tougher to sell than
anything
a book.
Yeah.
So you have to take it on faith or word of mouth, and word of mm-hmm. mouth is now getting out, thank heavens. But you know, it's a long, slow road, but that's okay. I'm in it for the long haul, and you know, that's where I see me going. Is not, I don't want to produce too many, but you know, each whatever techniques are driving me at the time, I think there's a place. And I mean, everything gets brought out for the new knitter. Now we have this year done the brand new knitter.
Mm-hmm.
It will be out May, June. And this is definitely my attempt to try and introduce people to knitting it with a very positive, open attitude. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in this is the way it must be done. But you can't give beginner knitters too many options. So I've tried to give them the essentials. There's one chapter that you need to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it you can dabble in as and when you're ready for it. And I found that was really weighty to film, because it's a huge responsibility to launch new knitters. I mean, it's a wonderful opportunity, but it's also a huge responsibility. So I actually found that very, very draining. And when I went to watch the footage that we'd filmed, it was just like I wasn't even there when we filmed it, because I'm there on the edge of my seat going, I wonder if I remembered to mention this. And then I would mention it and go, oh, good. and it's almost like, as you say it and you move right along and you empty your brain of what you've just done. It was really strange, because I knew there was my hands and I knew it was me saying all that, but I didn't know, I couldn't remember what I'd said. So it's both a privilege and a great responsibility, and I found it quite weighty. So I hope I've achieved, I don't know, I hope, I think I have achieved what I want, the open-minded radical knitter. Yeah, so I hope my aim with a brand new knitter is to encourage people to knit, give them the tools, and hopefully give them a free approach to knitting. Yes, there are ways and sort of certain conventions that help us when we start, but I just want to open the doors and hope that it will launch a lot of knitters. And the proof will be in other people watching it. I was pleased with the footage when I watched it, but it'll be very interesting to see when it's out there. So it's been fun, and it would be really cool if I can launch a few more knitters.
Well, we look forward to seeing it. So
great.
There it is. This week we'd like to thank show sponsors, the Simply Socks Yarn Company, Pearlescence Yarns, and Verena Knitting, as well as Lucy Neatby for sitting and chatting with us, you, our listeners, and our supporters. I'd also like to say a special thank you to Candy for doing our vests for Stitches West, so thank you very much, Candy. As a slight teaser for next week's episode, we'll be discussing the Knit Along and Cookie A's Sock Innovation Book, so do give us a listen. As always, everything we've discussed in this week's show can be found in the show notes page, which is located at knitmoregirls.blogspot.com, and we love your feedback, and you can send that to us at knitmoregirls@yahoo.com. Please remember to submit your contest entries for both the title contest for the new segment and your suggestions on what you want to hear about. The contest ends this upcoming Friday, April 4th, and we'll announce the winners in episode 47.
This is Lucy,
Jasmine,
and Gigi
telling you to knit more.